Social network users also have a social conscience. On the first Tuesday of every month in Philadelphia and in a number of cities around the country, technologists and researchers gather to exchange information about how new media tools are being used to advance social and economic justice causes around the world. The event is called Net Tuesday, and the organization that sponsors it, NetSquared, describes itself as an organization that enables social benefit organizations to leverage the tools of the social web. At the March Net Tuesday meeting, participants gathered in a law firm conference room on the 31st floor of one of Philadelphia's tallest buildings, 2 Liberty Place. As the lights of the city twinkled outside and New Jersey sparkled across the Delaware River nearby, the audience learned how some of the popular social tools are playing an increasing role in crises and disasters around the world. Drexel University professor Liesl Zack, who teaches in the school's College of Information Science and Technology, says there's still a credibility gap between information that people get from the mainstream news media and what they get from online sources like Twitter.
I think the biggest thing that I'm aware of and sort of my biggest concern about the whole social media phenomenon is the tendency to take as absolute truth anything that is communicated over it. I think that people were much more critical about their information sources when information was harder to get. And now that it is so easy to get and so ubiquitous, I think a lot of people are not taking the time or the trouble to evaluate their sources of information before believing that something is true and then passing it on to other people as reality.
Zack is supervising some research by one of the other presenters, PhD student Thomas Hevren. Hevren is doing his doctoral research on how Twitter was used by the community of Lakewood, Washington, near Tacoma last year, immediately following the killings of 4 police officers in a coffee shop. As the search for the killer progressed, Hevren says, people turned to Twitter for information.
And for about 48 hours, various agencies searched for the suspect. And during this time, I observed that a lot of people, including news media organizations, public service organizations, and citizens, use Twitter as one method to distribute crisis-related information.
Hevren analyzed more than 6,000 tweets and categorized their content as either information, opinion, emotion, or action.
We found that most of the tweets contained information-related content. Almost 80% of the tweets did in this case. And then About 17% of the tweets contained opinion-related content.
What Hevren says was most encouraging was that in the early part of the search for the suspect, the vast majority of the Twitter messages were informational, not speculative or opinions.
For opinion-related tweets, in the first 12 hours, there was a minimal amount. About 7% of the tweets contained opinion-related content. But over time, over the next 24 hours or so, this increased considerably to about 21%, so increased 3 times.
But Hevren says the opinion-related tweets declined again shortly afterwards, and he's concerned about a lack of participation by official information sources in the Twitter channel.
There was minimal contributions from public service agencies. Some of the message from county government agency was information about the police officers killed, messages from their family members, and specifics about making donations on behalf of the police officers. However, besides those types of tweets, public service agencies didn't join in on the conversation of the WA shooting hashtag. What I think would happen in the future may be beneficial is that if a representative from a public service agency entered the conversation and sent out official information about the crisis.
Hevren's advisor, Professor Zack, says she knows Twitter is popular, but she thinks that social networking sites with a richer feature set, like blogs or Facebook, might be better suited to providing the clearinghouse that people are looking for information in a crisis setting.
Well, clearly Twitter is very, very popular and has a lot to offer in terms of getting information out quickly. It doesn't have the richness, I think, that the blogs provided or that Facebook would provide, because it is, after all, limited to 140 characters. So it's a great way of getting information out, retweeting to move a message through a large group of people very fast. But if what you're looking for is actually connecting and understanding how people feel, I think that blogs may remain, until we get some new social media tool, they really may remain a good way of sharing experiences.
Another way that social media technologists are sharing experiences is through long-distance collaboration surrounding an international disaster. Walter Zwekla, one of the other presenters, is a geographer with a company called ImageCat. ImageCat performs risk assessments that involve geographic analysis for multinational companies. ImageCat is also contributing its expertise to the damage assessments being performed on buildings in the devastated Haitian capital of Port-au-Prince. ImageCat assembled a network of volunteer analysts. They're comparing high-resolution before and after satellite images of Port-au-Prince contributed by Google Earth. The researchers are recording the original boundaries of all the major buildings in the Haitian capital. First, they draw digital rectangles on the photos, and then they compare them to the post-earthquake images to see how badly the buildings have been affected.
There's multiple phases to this damage assessment, and one was kind of identifying building footprints, drawing a rectangle on top of that footprint, and then assessing different damage levels. Was there kind of just severe damage that was visible, or was there kind of a complete destruction or collapse? But we had over 500 volunteers from 23 different countries. We asked people to kind of list their affiliations, whether they were kind of students or professors at a particular university. We had a lot of people volunteering their time from private industry as well as different government institutions.
Zwekla says the task is a fairly standard one for geographers after a natural disaster. What's different, he says, is how they're leveraging the online universe of people who want to volunteer.
Really, what's new, what the innovation here is the ability to tap into, almost at its most basic form, is really a distributed labor force. It doesn't matter where people are, but as long as they have a certain kind of technology infrastructure, being, kind of a relatively high bandwidth internet connection and the platform of Google Earth, we could kind of channel a lot of people's desire to participate and be an active player and kind of donate their time and expertise in this way.
People do want to volunteer when a disaster strikes, says Zwekla, and he thinks it'll be easier to get them to contribute their expertise if they know they won't necessarily be asked to go to the disaster zone to do their work.
Events like this are going on all the time, but they receive different amounts of attention from the public or from the media, depending on a whole complex range of issues. But yeah, hopefully, this is, just one more step in this kind of direction and trend of distributed technology and platforms and, kind of reducing the challenges that the physical geography present from people being distributed.
But no matter what the technological tools are, advanced planning is always going to be critical. As Drexel's Professor Zach puts it,
the thing that I say to people when they talk about, well, what should we do if an emergency strikes, I always say, what you need to have done is you need to have set up the tools in advance and gotten people familiar with them, because in an emergency situation is not the moment that people are going to learn how to do something new.
In Philadelphia, this is Steve Lubetkin.